agricultural products being imported to the United States, which have generally been duty-free as a means of helping Africa. One result is that their own products are no longer being imported duty-free into the United States. So these white South African farmers who've been complaining of oppression will now actually be being hit with tariffs or regular duties. And so it's going to cost them financially, which is one of the reasons they're so upset by it and pretending that it was nothing to do with them.
Guardian reporter Chris McGreal. He was the Johannesburg correspondent for The Guardian during the last years of apartheid through 2002. We did this interview in early February. Over the past 2 months, Trump has suspended aid to South Africa, expelled the South African ambassador, and offered refugee status to white South Africans, claiming South Africa's discriminating against the white minority. Trump has also just nominated Leo Brent Bozell to be U.S. ambassador in South Africa. Bozell's son was sentenced to nearly 4 years in prison for his role in the January 6th insurrection before he was pardoned by President Trump. One note on Elon Musk's family. May Musk is Elon's mother, not his grandmother. To see part one of our interview with Chris McGreal, you can go to democracynow.org. We'll also link to his pieces, What Does Elon Musk Believe? And How the Roots of the PayPal Mafia Extend to Apartheid South Africa. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Lock your wigs, let the air out of your shoes, and prepare yourselves for a period of simulated exhilaration.
You're listening to Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
There's something curious about this broadcast.
KBOO's Metal Marathon, the Metal March, is back once again. And that means brand new metal merch. Go to kboo.fm/metal. to check out all KBOO's new metal merch, featuring exclusive artwork provided by local tattoo artist and musician at Unicron Artworks. This year's Metal Marathon is live on KBOO, Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Get your very own limited edition 2025 Metal March metal merch and listen to every installment of the Metal Marathon at kboo.fm/metal and support metal on your community radio station. KBOO Portland.
As part of the All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign, Comics Take co-host comedian Kimberly Nickel is producing a stand-up comedy show celebrating Women's History Month with a full cast of not dude comedians, sharing their best PG-13 rated jokes. The show will be live for an audience on Friday, March 28th at 6:30 p.m. Set your intentions, save your seat, RSVP at kboo.fm/comedy. KBOO Studio will be filled with an audience enjoying puns, impressions, and cocktails. It'll be better with you there. Join us in the back of KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland on Friday, March 28th, 6:30 p.m. This event will be recorded and played on the radio waves on Monday, March 31st at 10 p.m. Donations to KBOO are encouraged. If you don't show up on the 28th, no one will hear your laughter on the 31st.
Lithium Americas is a Vancouver, Canada-based company that has begun construction of a mine spanning 5,000 acres, including an open pit that will be roughly 1 mile across and 2 miles wide. The mine will burn about 11,300 gallons of diesel fuel per day. It will provide up to 25% of global lithium supply. This is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Will Falk of Protect Thacker Pass. Their campaign ended in, I'm going to say it, a loss last year. Construction of the open pit lithium mine in Nevada near the Oregon border is underway. And Will is one of the protesters being sued by the mining company. But first, if you have resources and you're looking for a proactive, constructive place to invest them for a better world, this is KBOO's Spring Membership Drive. You can make a contribution at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Or you can go to our website at kboo.fm or on the app. You can tap the red button at the top that says donate. Or you can send us a contribution in a physical envelope to KBOO Radio 20, Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Will, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Lisa. I'm excited to be able to talk about this campaign.
Will, is this the same lithium that we want to force Ukraine to cut us in on? What is lithium? What's it for?
Yeah, lithium. Lithium is a mineral that is used in for this particular campaign. The lithium will be used for electric car batteries. It's a tiny ingredient of an electric car battery. And electric car batteries, of course, are a tiny ingredient of an electric car. But it is one of the minerals that must be ripped from the earth before an electric car battery can be manufactured. Unfortunately for people in the Great Basin region of the United States, the Great Basin is one of the most mineral lithium rich regions on the planet. And there's going to be a boom. We're kind of in the middle of a lithium mining boom. But if people are going to prop up electric cars as a solution to climate change, then they need to understand how much of the natural world is going to be destroyed for minerals like lithium.
Tell us the story of Thacker Pass. What happened and what's happening now? We have a little thumbprint of, you know, an open pit mine. But what's the story?
Well, I want to start with all of the other than human creatures that live in Thacker Pass and orient us in the ecology of Thacker Pass. So Thacker Pass is a beautiful mountain pass in northern Nevada. It's part of the Great Basin. It's about 15 or 20 miles as the crow flies from the Oregon border. But Thacker Pass is part of what is called the sagebrush steppe in the Great Basin. It is home to old growth sagebrush. Many people are familiar with the term old growth forests. Well, sagebrush can have old growth. There can be sagebrush that are 4 or 5 feet tall that are 100, 125 years old. And Thacker Pass is some of the best remaining old growth sagebrush habitat left on Earth. Thacker Pass is also home to a number of endangered or threatened species. The greater sage grouse, which is an iconic species in the American West, lives in Thacker Pass and has very important mating grounds that will be affected by the mine. There is a very rare snail that only lives in the springs that are found around Thacker Pass, springs that are going to be drawn down by the mine. It's called the Kings River Perch, and it will likely go extinct because of the Thacker Pass mine. There are antelope that live in Thacker Pass, mule deer, golden eagles are a species that live around Thacker Pass, and the Lithium Nevada Corporation is getting what are called incidental take permits to be able to destroy golden eagle nests for the mine. There is a threatened kind of trout, a Lahontan cutthroat trout that live in streams around the mine that is going to be harmed by the mine. But my point is just to explain that Thacker Pass is home to countless creatures that depend upon Thacker Pass for their very lives. And we're living in a time that ecologists are calling the sixth mass extinction event on planet Earth. It's probably the worst extinction event that the world has ever seen, and that includes when meteors hit the Earth and eventually caused so many dinosaurs to go extinct. And the difference between past extinction events and extinction event we're living through is that this one is completely human caused. So at a time when we're causing between 100 and 200 species a day to go extinct, it's actually direct habitat destruction that's the biggest driver of this extinction event, climate change is part of it, but direct habitat destruction, like what is happening at Thacker Pass, is the primary driver of biodiversity collapse today. To orient us more in a human-centric perspective, we have to remember that the Great Basin's indigenous peoples, according to their own traditions, have lived in areas like Thacker Pass and indeed in Thacker Pass for time immemorial. Western science tells us that indigenous humans have lived in this area for over 12,000 years. Thacker Pass is sacred to Paiute and Shoshone peoples. It is known in the local Paiute dialect as Pahimaha, which translates to rotten moon. And the name for Thacker Pass, for Pahimaha, came from a pre-contact massacre of Paiute people. Paiute, the oral history goes that a village that was in Thacker Pass, the hunters were off in a valley several miles away. And when they came back, they found their loved ones massacred. And Thacker Pass, when you're looking at it from below, kind of looks like a crescent moon. It is also the site of an 1865 massacre of Paiute people. So in the 1860s, the United States was involved in what was called the Snake War. Snake was a term used for lots of the Great Basin's indigenous peoples because the Snake River flows through the northern part or just above the Great Basin, and many indigenous peoples met on the Snake River and they became known as Snakes. And this war between the United States government and settlers and Native peoples has been described as the bloodiest so-called Indian War west of the Mississippi. And on September 12th, 1865, a patrol of U.S. cavalry volunteers surprise attacked a camp of peaceful Paiutes and murdered at least 31 men, women, and children in Thacker Pass. So this is all being destroyed by the Thacker Pass lithium mine. Ironic is too easy of a term. One of the main reasons the Snake War was fought was indigenous people started to get sick of all the mining encroachments on their land. They started to see what mining was doing to water sources. They got tired of it. And they said enough is enough, and they stood up for the land. So in 1865, Paiute people who were resisting mining encroachments on their land were murdered. And now the 2020s, the American government responsible for that massacre is now destroying the last bit of evidence that massacre ever happened. And denying that it happened at Thacker Pass, because if they acknowledged that this actually happened in Thacker Pass, they would be burdened with at least more consultation about the massacre there.
Because there's processes in place to deal with cultural and spiritual sites, but there's apparently bureaucratic ways to get around that. Okay, now I'm going to shift gears a little bit. So many questions. I'm just going to try to line them up. Okay. What is the Lithium Nevada Corporation? I want to dig into I think that there's international corporate ties to this site. And then I want to come back to how you all protested there. So let's just start out Lithium Nevada Corporation. Is that even the beginning? It's like a hairball. I don't even know where to start.
Yeah, there's a lot of entry points. That's a good one. So Lithium Nevada Corporation is the American subsidiary of Vancouver-based corporation, Lithium Americas Corporation. Lithium Americas Corporation has been involved in other kinds of lithium minings, especially down in what they call the Lithium Triangle in South America, where they have been accused of human rights abuses. They've been involved with big Chinese lithium investors, like a corporation called Gaofeng, that's been involved in accusations of human rights abuses in South America. But it's important to understand why Lithium Nevada Corporation has to be an American subsidiary of Lithium Americas. And this is also a key part to understanding the whole Thacker Pass campaign. And this all goes back to what's called the 1872 General Mining Law. So after the American Civil War, which ended in 1865, the American government was in massive war debt, and it was looking for ways to pay off this war debt. And politicians, realizing that the American West was starting to quote-unquote open up, of course there are Native peoples already living there, that had to be moved out and killed and massacred before they could open up the American West. But the American government decided that one way that they could raise money is by selling cheap mining leases on American public land. So in 1872, Congress passed a law that said that the highest and best use of American public lands is mining. And it gave an automatic right to corporations who located valuable minerals on public lands. And so I want to be really clear here. A lot of times people hear about endangered species in Thacker Pass. They hear about the sacredness of Thacker Pass. They hear about the massacre that happened there, and they think, oh, well, that will stop the mine. That means that they can't destroy that place. It's not true. Under American law, it doesn't matter if a place is the most sacred place in the world to Native peoples. If they've located valuable minerals there, the government does not have discretion to deny them a permit. They must give them the permit. They must be allowed to mine. And so when people talk about public lands as being somehow ours, it's simply not true. The federal government owns public lands. And it holds public lands in trust for mining corporations until they locate valuable minerals. So we have to understand that when we're looking at the Thacker Pass campaign, because there is no legal way to stop a public lands mine once valuable minerals have been located. You might be able to force the government to go through more extensive consultation processes, which could slow the process down and possibly scare investors away from, investing their money in a mine that would take years to get permitted versus investing their money in a mine that could get permitted right away. Again, to just make this very clear, American law gives an automatic right to corporations who locate valuable minerals on public lands to mine those minerals. And these minerals, of course, they're used for a lot of things. Electric car batteries is just one of them. But I always want to direct people's attention to things like with genocide going on in Gaza, for example. It's American public lands minerals that go into those weapons that are killing Palestinian children right now. So these kinds of laws, while we in our minds we sometimes compartmentalize them as only being a Western issue, a public lands issue, an environmental issue, American public lands is where the American war machine gets its materials to go out and participate in genocide.
If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Will Falk of Protect Thacker Pass. But there's something else happening. It is the Spring Membership Drive. And you can join KBOO as a member by making a contribution to support this programming. We need your financial support to hold space for the locally produced news, public affairs, and music that links our communities together. Is this story not blowing your mind right now? Have you heard about it on the New York Times or MSNBC? No, you have not. And this is the place for you to invest in real information that's put together by real people. Invest your hard-earned resources at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321, or you can go out to our website at kboo.fm or on the app. You can tap the red button at the top that says donate. You can send us a contribution in a physical envelope to KBOO Radio 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, Keeping It Real, boy do we ever, during this hour. And it's really an honor to have Will Falk from Protect Thacker Pass. Their campaign ended in a loss last year, construction of the open pit lithium mine in Nevada near the Oregon border is underway, and protesters like Will are being sued by the mining company. And I want to also say, shout out to Paul Cienfuegos of KBOO, who is one of the Thacker Pass defendants. Taking a deep breath. This is a really, really hard story. Will, talk about the protest. How did you protest, and who are the defendants, and how is it that you're, this is not even over for you? Talk about that.
Yeah, so I guess the protests really started, I would say, with my dear friend Max Wilbert, who is an author that has written about problems with so-called green energy. And he was researching for a great book that he co-authored called Bright Green Lies, which really delves into things like, you know, all the extraction that goes into things like electric cars and solar panels and wind turbines and all those things. Max learned about the Lithium Nevada's application for permits for the Thacker Pass lithium mine.
Where was that?
I think he came across that in 2020. So it was in 2020 when the whole National Environmental Policy Act (NEPA) process, permitting process, was going on for the Thacker Pass lithium mine. They were writing the environmental impact statement and those kinds of things. I was at like a friend's Thanksgiving with Max in the fall of 2020. And he was telling me about this, and both Max and I have spent a lot of time on public lands in the Great Basin. We love the Great Basin. And when we found out they were going to destroy this beautiful place, we decided we were going to try and stop them. So Max and I, I've been involved. I'm a lawyer and also a frontline activist, and I've been involved in a few successful land defense campaigns. One, the Unistoten camp up in central British Columbia, where native folks have been blocking tar sands pipelines from destroying their lands. And then also I lived up on near the summit of Mauna Kea with Native Hawaiians, as they were able to stop the construction of this massive telescope. The way that Native Hawaiians stopped the 30-meter telescope on Mauna Kea in 2015 was enough Native Hawaiians showed up on the one access road that construction equipment had to access the construction site, and simply block the road for long enough that they decided they couldn't get the construction done. Talking with Max, we realized Thacker Pass was in a pretty remote place, and there was only really one main road that you could get construction equipment. So we decided, well, let's see if we can raise enough of a fuss about this that maybe we could get enough people to come out and block that road too. So we kind of had a few goals. The first one was to actually stop the construction of the mine, actually stop the physical destruction of this beautiful place. But we had another goal, which was to force a public conversation about whether things like electric cars are really the solution to climate change. And I want to be really, really clear here. Both Max and I completely understand that the combustion of fossil fuels is causing climate change, and that climate change is an existential threat, and it's something that we must fight. But we have to be really clear about what are solutions to climate change and what aren't. And we have to ask questions about whether destroying more of the natural world is the way to save the natural world. So we wanted to create, you know, this public conversation about that, ask the hard questions. We decided on the same day that the Bureau of Land Management issued the final federal permits for the mine, that was January 15th, 2021. we went up and we set up a camp right in the middle of where the open pit was proposed for and is being constructed now. We spent most of 2021 living there at that camp through blizzards and mud and the blazing hot Nevada summer. We were trying to raise awareness and really trying to stop the mind. We after a few months being out there, some of the local native folks heard about what was going on and came out. And there were some environmental groups that had filed lawsuits against the mine for the way that the BLM permitted the mine. They fast-tracked the permitting process. There's a number of environmental problems that they didn't really iron out in the environmental impact statement. But because of this mad rush for lithium, they were permitting the mine anyway. But I realized that no one was representing Native American perspectives in the lawsuits against the mine. So in the summer of 2021, I began representing the Reno Sparks Indian Colony, which is a tribe that has members who descend from people who lived in that area, as well as the Summit Lake Paiute tribe, who also has members that descend from that area. We challenged the Bureau of Land Management's consultation process because they didn't actually talk to any tribes before permitting the mine. And like I explained earlier, it's not like these lawsuits were going to get the permit permanently revoked. There was no legal argument we can make to make that possible. The American legal system does not make that a possibility. All we were doing was trying to get the Bureau of Land Management, the federal government, even Deb Haaland, the first ever Native Secretary of the Interior, to pause the project so that enough time could be spent talking with Native peoples about what they were going to destroy up there and coming up with ways to, I don't know, at least mitigate or these are really sort of weak things that we could ask for, but even just commemorating the fact that there was a massacre there, and the federal government would not do that. So eventually the lawsuits failed and there was no more delays that we could achieve. So after the lawsuits failed, when we found out that they were going to start construction in earnest in the spring of 2023, a group of us went out to Thacker Pass to peacefully protest the construction. We stood in the way of some construction equipment, vans with workers trying to access the site, that kind of thing. And we ended up being sued by the Lithium Nevada Corporation for interfering with their construction operation. That lawsuit is ongoing. We have a local Nevada state court judge issued what's called a preliminary injunction against us. We're not allowed to return to Thacker Pass for the time being. If we went there, we could be arrested on spot. I was sued with, there's three or four Native folks who have been sued with us, and they can't go up there to pray without facing arrest. So we could end up owing the Lithium Nevada Corporation hundreds of thousands of dollars for what we did. It's as we're seeing, corporations are getting more and more aggressive with punishing peaceful activists for exercising their free speech rights. We just saw what the Energy Transfer Corporation just was able to do to Greenpeace, winning like a $660 million damages award for being involved in the Standing Rock protests.
And that was allegedly in a kangaroo court from near that location, where there was a lot of discussion about whether the nonprofit could even get a fair trial, and they were not able to move the trial. Can I have to jump in here and say, I bet you left out a whole lot of detail about how you built relationships with the local tribes and how it came that people had wanted to even stand with you in this very symbolic gesture. But before I do the station ID again, I just want to ask you, so what you're saying is that as the current authoritarian government right now is basically queuing up a whole bunch of parks, I think, national parks, to start mining different kinds of things, what I kind of hear you saying is that this is an era of hardball, and actually we don't really even have a legal leg to stand on if we want to keep the presidential administration from, I don't know, mining off the coast of Alaska. Am I misreading that? Attorney guy, you're an attorney, man.
Well, I guess it is true that things are getting worse, and that Trump is stripping away what weak regulations and protections that existed. And let me be clear, those were never adequate regulations in the first place. But I also want to be very clear that this is not a problem that's exclusive to Trump or the Republican Party. The Democrats are completely complicit in all of this. So, it was actually the Bureau of Land Management under the Biden administration that refused to delay construction of the project. It was actually, I mentioned Deb Haaland. So many people, when they heard about what was happening at Thacker Pass, they'd look at us like we were crazy and say, well, haven't you talked with Deb Haaland about this? Yeah, we tried really hard to talk to Deb Haaland about this, and she completely ignored us. And it's important for people to understand that the system doesn't put someone like Deb Haaland, the first ever Native Secretary of Interior, into a position because it cares about Native voices. It puts a person like Deb Haaland into those positions because it wants to essentially tokenize the position. It wants to greenwash or make people think that just because there's a Native person in this position of power that they actually care about Native rights and Native sovereignty. Some things along those lines that also happened. Early in the campaign, Thacker Pass is about 30 miles from the nearest public restroom. And we had Native elders coming out to pray and learn about what was happening. That's a long ways to go to get to a bathroom. And so they asked us if there's a way that we could put in like composting toilets, composting outhouses. You have to get permits to do that. So we asked BLM for permits. And of course, BLM, I think Max and I were only out at Thacker Pass for 3 or 4 days when the first people that came to visit us were the BLM cops to let us know that they knew we were there, that they were watching us and, essentially intimidating us into leaving. We asked for those permits. They said no. So we ended up digging 6-foot composting outhouses in the middle of an open pit, where the open pit for the mine was going to go. This open pit would be 400 feet deep and would have all kinds of chemicals in it from the mining and everything. We ended up getting sued, or not sued, we ended up getting fined $50,000 by the Biden Bureau of Land Management for our outhouses. And to kind of break this down a little further, it's kind of funny, even though it is not funny, because that's a lot of money to owe. The rules about how the government can fine you for something like this say that they can fine you for 3 times the market value of the land that you occupied and took, quote unquote, took from the federal government or interfered with their property rights in the land. And they can also fine you for administrative costs. So for like 3 months where our little outhouses were The federal government estimated that we deprived them of something like $13 for the total amount of time that those outhouses were there. Well, they charged us $49,500 and something for the administrative costs to investigate us for these outhouses, to monitor these outhouses, to take photos of us in camp. And, you know, so this is, it's just an example of the way that administrative agencies can bully people. You know, I always like to say that, you know, this really shows you that in the United States, regular old human beings can't go out and take a crap on the land. But if you're a corporation, you can take a massive crap on the land that takes hundreds of years to clean up.
I got to jump in here. I have to jump in here and do our station ID. But just to be crystal clear, no, not at all. Just to be crystal clear, what you've been dealing with and the protesters and the tribes dealing with here at Thacker Pass, that was all courtesy of the Biden administration, the Biden Bureau of Land Management. Yes, and it is the spring membership drive at KBOO Portland, and you can join us as a member by making a contribution to support this programming. I mean, if you're listening right now, isn't this blowing your mind? Probably at a KBOO audience, more people of a KBOO audience probably already know about this issue, but I'm just saying, I don't think hardly anyone has heard about it, and we're still arguing over, you know, whether anyone should vandalize a Tesla, and it's possible that there are bigger issues. Anyway, we need your financial support at KBOO Community Radio in Portland to hold space for this kind of locally produced news, public affairs, and music. And you can invest your hard-earned resources, kboo.fm/give, or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Or you can go to our website at kboo.fm or on the app, tap the red button, send a physical envelope, KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. This is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Will Falk of Protect Thacker Pass, the Thacker Pass fight against the gigantic open pit lithium mine. It could have never been won, but that doesn't mean people shouldn't have been there putting it on the table and putting it on the map. It's an open pit lithium mine in Nevada. It's vast, okay, near the Oregon border. And these protesters, including KBOO's Paul Cienfuegos, are being sued by the mining company. And, I just have to come back over here. Okay, so it was not really possible to argue about not digging this open pit mine, but Human Rights Watch did a report, I think it was in January. Human Rights Watch and the American Civil Liberties Union say the U.S. government violated international human rights law when it provided a mining permit to Lithium Americas for the Thacker Pass mine in Nevada. According to a report, it was released in January by Human Rights Watch and the ACLU, and I have questions. Like, we haven't even talked about the water yet. Like, the water is huge. But Will, I mean, who even covered this? Were you on Democracy Now? Because I haven't seen this anywhere.
We weren't on Democracy Now. There was a New York Times story about it. There was for several years. We did get a lot of, especially local and regional coverage, especially through the Reno television and that kind of thing. It was decently well covered there, and there was a question
in the local community.
Yeah. Well, and even somewhat nationally, there's a Jeopardy clue that Thacker Pass was the answer to. So it got some awareness. But yeah, I mean, part of the problem is we're fighting half of the environmental movement in this too. You have half of the environmental movement who thinks that, you know, more extraction and more manufacturing and giving subsidies to mining corporations and manufacturing corporations like General Motors is the solution to climate change. And a lot of people think that we must be somehow pro-fossil fuel because we're opposing this mine. And unfortunately, that kind of shows you just how out of touch mainstream media is with actual solutions. You know, I guess we should expect corporate media to support solutions that involve giving corporations more money. And that's exactly what things like the electric car industry are all about.
Talk about the water. Water usage is huge. How much water are they going to use? Will it affect Nevada and Oregon too? Just talk about the water.
Yeah, I think once the mine is fully up and running, it's going to use 5,200 acre feet of water a year. An acre foot is, picture a whole acre of land, a square acre of land, and cover that in water a foot deep. The Thacker Pass lithium mine will use 5,200 of those square acres of water every single year for lithium, to extract lithium from the land.
Until somebody decides that the mine, and this is one of the biggest lithium mines in the world, right? Am I imagining that?
It is. It is one of the biggest lithium mines in the world. It's also in one of the driest regions in the world. Northern Nevada is one of the driest regions in the United States. I think it gets something like 9 inches of rain a year. And it's important, I keep using the term Great Basin, it's important to understand the hydrology of the Great Basin. So the reason that it's called the Great Basin is it actually works like a big sink. So in the 1800s, they used to call sinks basins. And in the Great Basin, water doesn't flow out to the ocean. Water flows down into the basin, and it sits in groundwater, what little water is there. And of course, that water is completely essential to every form of life in the Great Basin. It takes a really long time for that water to recharge. So when you start removing something like 5,200 acre feet of water, you're starting to really draw down these basins. And the Great Basin itself is actually composed of lots of little basins. And the actual water management unit is what the Nevada State Water Authorities call it. They already know that it's already overdrawn by 30,000 acre feet. So basic arithmetic tells you that this can't go on for very long before all of the groundwater is gone. All of the water in these regions are gone. And these are regions that have already used far too much water for things like ranching and agriculture, other mines in the area. It's absolutely true that water is life. And when you're destroying so much water and destroying so much life for a product, an electric car that no one actually needs to live, this is moral and ethical madness, in my opinion.
Who's making the most money? Who's making the money off of it?
The Lithium Nevada Corporation making a lot of money. The car manufacturers are going to be making a lot of money. General Motors gave a big loan to Lithium Nevada. I think it was like $600 million or something for the mine. The Department of Energy actually is giving Lithium Nevada, I think it's $2.2 billion to get the mine up and going. And the government doesn't make those kinds of loans if the corporations who truly run the government are not going to make a ton of money off of these things. The mining corporation is going to make a lot of money. Electric car manufacturers who need lithium for their batteries are going to make a lot of money.
Let's go back to the indigenous communities. Can you talk about the biggest possible picture about how indigenous communities are affected, not just by this mine, but there's all kinds of mines in indigenous communities? I think there's multiple mines right now, maybe even being litigated in different parts of the country. I mean, stealing mines from Native people, it's a thing. Can you just talk about the bigger impact that this mine and any of the others will be having on indigenous communities?
Yeah, I think there's a stat that is out there. I forget who calculated it, but it's something like 75% of the United States rare earth metals, critical minerals, are located within 30 miles of reservations. You know, mining corporations can't mine minerals where they're not. You know, to make this whole so-called transition to electric vehicles and other kinds of so-called green energy technologies, it's going to require destroying a lot of land next to reservations. Just to talk a little bit about the physical kind of threats that these mines pose, you've got the water being drawn down. That's a huge problem. But it's also when you mine like this, you stir up a lot of radioactive stuff. So even the Lithium Nevada's environmental impact statement for the Thacker Pass lithium mine talks about how local water in the area is going to have elevated levels of things like antimony, uranium, lead, toxic substances for well over 300 years after the mine starts operating. So you're toxifying a whole environment to do this. For things like open pit mines, you have a lot of air pollution problems. The wind never stops blowing in the Great Basin. For Thacker Pass, the wind actually blows straight at the Fort McDermitt Paiute Shoshone Reservation, about 30 miles from the mine, and that's really nothing for air pollution to travel. So things like particulate, even just the little sand and dust that gets stirred up that humans breathe in, can be really harmful, can exacerbate things like asthma. I think it's important to understand that this is a region that has been devastated by mines for the last 160 years. As I mentioned earlier, one of the big reasons that Europeans settled in Nevada is because of mining, and especially silver mines in the area. Once you start mining, once you start destroying land for minings, you start to destroy the local food systems. And once you start to destroy local food systems, you force indigenous peoples into your workforce.
No, wait, go back to that. Like, how are we destroying the food systems? Tell us more.
So a great example of this is, especially in Nevada, is as silver mining started picking up in the 1860s and 1870s, in order to do something like smelt a silver. So you have to, you get it out of the ground, you've got to melt it down into a usable thing. Well, there's not very much fuel for smelters in the Great Basin. The one source of fuel that did exist and somewhat still does exist are what are called pinyon juniper forests. So these are forests that are made of pinyon pine trees and juniper trees. Pinyon pine trees produce pine nuts, and in fact, way better ones than you can buy at Whole Foods, for example, that are imported from Italy or China. But these pine nuts have been a staple in Great Basin traditional food systems for time immemorial. Paiute and Shoshone people have eaten pine nuts forever. And it's just like, you know, we know of bison on the plains and salmon in the Pacific Northwest. There are pine nut peoples in the Great Basin. As the mines started getting going in the 1860s and the 1870s, they started cutting pinyon juniper forests to provide the fuel for the smelters. And there's reports from the mines at the time that in one day they could clear something like 50 acres around a mine, or in one year they could they're cutting hundreds of acres of these mines, and you have photos of the hills just completely shorn of trees for the mines. And there's also records of like early Nevada politicians talking about how it's good that what they called the Indian, quote unquote, Indians, pine nut groves, pine nut orchards are being cut, because if we cut the trees, then the native peoples don't have food and they got to come work for us in order to get money to pay for the food that they need. And this is, you know, this is a tactic that the American military has employed from the very beginning. You know, we know that, for example, I think it was the U.S. Cavalry Commander Philip Sheridan who wanted to bring Lakota people in North and South Dakota in the Black Hills under control. Instead of fighting them outright, if you kill off the buffalo, then you bring in, then you force them to come negotiate with you. And a very similar thing happened in Nevada. And the reason that that's all important is, especially tribes in Nevada are some of the most impoverished tribes in the United States, and in fact, some of the most impoverished communities in the world. That didn't happen by accident. There was all these economic policies, things like mining, that destroyed local food systems, that made it impossible for Native peoples to live their traditional ways of life and force them to assimilate, force them into local settler economies. So this impoverishment came because of colonization. And while we think of this as something that happened in the past, it's still affecting people today, because one of the things that mines will do is, after 160 years of destroying the land and destroying local food systems, they come and say, hey, we see that there's no jobs here in this region. Y'all are really poor. How about you don't protest our mine, because we'll give a few of your tribal members jobs at the mine. And that's, you know, my heart completely goes out. I completely understand when you're extremely poor, how the prospect of a job can that can mean life or death, health or sickness for your family. But what's not talked about is how this has been a long and intentional process to impoverish Native peoples, and how, you know, at this point there's not a whole lot of agency when not just your local economy is destroyed, but your local land and its ability to support human and other life has been so destroyed over the years that now mines are one of the only viable economic alternatives.
And I feel like I read an article about this process where people asked, like, well, did Native tribes get any input? And the article said that the federal government notified the tribes during the pandemic lockdown when all the offices were closed. And so there was not a lot of input. Is that accurate? Is that your understanding too?
Yeah. So one of the first things to understand about a consultation, federal consultation processes, especially on things like public lands mining, is we cannot confuse consultation with consent. So the government is not going to Native communities and saying, can we do this? They're saying, we're going to do this. Tell us your feelings about it. They record the feelings and they check that box. And for purposes of the law, they fulfilled their duty. So the Bureau of Land Management claims that in the fall of 2019, two or three months after Lithium Nevada submitted their notice that they were going to seek this permit and go through the whole National Environmental Policy Act permitting process for the mine, the Bureau of Land Management claims that it sent letters to three tribes. It's important to understand that there's probably 25 tribes that have connections to this area. But to three, and they sent them to the Winnemucca Indian Colony. They say the Fort McDermott Paiute and Shoshone Tribe and the Summit Lake Paiute Tribe. The time that they say that they sent these letters, it was when the pandemic hit and so many tribal offices were closed down. People weren't coming to the office to regularly check mail. And the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, a federal agency that was formed to advise other federal agencies about how to handle things like cultural resource consultation, advised that all consultation periods be indefinitely suspended while the pandemic was going on, particularly because Native communities were some of the hardest hit communities by the pandemic. Well, in 2021, Once all of these tribes actually learned about the project, they all sent letters to the Bureau of Land Management saying, we didn't receive these letters. We have not been consulted about this mine. So BLM is saying that all we have to do is send a letter, and if we don't get a response, then that's fine. We cross that.
This is blowing my mind. Like, I cannot accept it all. I don't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Then as we got into court, the courts never actually ruled that, consultation happened. What the court ruled was that in the totality of the facts, what the BLM did to consult with tribes was adequate. That's just sending a letter and not receiving a response is adequate consultation. So it's just really important that people understand that the first thing to understand is the government doesn't need anybody's permission, doesn't need consent to do this. Now put yourself in the psychology of a federal agency employee who, especially now, right? So one thing that administrations always do, if you want to speed up permitting processes, if you want to show corporations that they can get their projects up and running faster, one thing you do is you defund administrative agencies. And what does that mean? That means cutting staff. So now you have these overworked agency staff who have, you know, the Thacker Pass mine is like one of 30 projects that they're involved in permitting. And this is just like one office in Nevada. And you train them that you don't have to get consent from the law doesn't say you're getting a yes or no. It just means you need to touch base with them. And you're an employee who's trying to think, okay, how do I get this done faster? I've got people higher up in the government telling me that I have to make these deadlines. What are corners that I can cut? Tribal consultation is always going to be a corner that they cut. Because they know that for the most part, tribes lack the resources to challenge them on this, especially in court. And they also sort of roll their eyes. They're like, what's the point? If we can't deny the permit based off what you say. So what really is the point of us talking to you anyway?
So just, I mean, we're starting to run out of show. I have to jump in here. So the Bureau of Land Management under Joe Biden, who was everybody's happy Democratic president guy, basically put this information, he wadded it up in a piece of paper and threw it at the doors of three of the two dozen Native tribes that had something to do with this. And then they played the totality of circumstance card. I can't even accept that. Okay, breathing. Everybody, if you're listening right now, you need to breathe, okay? All right, so I could talk with you all day, Will Falk. Someday, let's do that. So I have to jump to the end and say, how can listeners support your work? What do you need from people now?
You can follow the stuff that we have going on at protectthackerpass.org, THACKER, is how you spell Thacker. But I think, you know, the biggest thing that we need to understand is that American law protects the destruction of the natural world, and it empowers corporations to do this. To keep it to one issue, American public lands mining. Donald Trump issued an executive order, I think 6 or 7 days ago, about expediting critical mineral production. So we can expect to see agencies start to ramp up the amount of permits that they're giving. What I really want listeners to understand is this is not something that we're going to stop through public comment periods. This is not something that we're going to write to our friendly Democratic senator and they're going to be like, yes, we should interfere with the American mining industry to protect the natural world. They know what the situation is. They know that the 1872 mining law gives corporations a right to mine. And right now, in fact, American Democratic senators like Catherine Cortez Masto in Nevada are openly advocating for expanding the 1872 mining law to make it easier to mine. So the only way we're going to beat this and the only way we're going to save the planet truthfully, is if we do it ourselves, we are going to need mass movements that get in the way of this construction. It's not something that the government is not going to save us. The courts are not going to save us. Big NGOs are not going to save us. It's going to have to be us. And that starts with the very emotional, you have to come to peace within yourself that it's no one else is going to save us. And we're going to have to figure out how to do it ourselves. What I would really like for people to do is consider that and come to peace with that, and maybe even consider how you could dedicate your life to this kind of work, because that is something that is desperately needed. Just like they have professionals running these corporations, doing the dirty work for this kind of environmental destruction, we need professional revolutionaries, and that only starts with experience. I'll ask you to consider that.
Right. Honestly, that's it for our show. This is Keeping It Real with Lisa Loving. Thanks again to our guest, Will Falk. Will, you gave me a lot to think about. Connect with them online at protectthackerpass.org. Come back on this show. We need to have an update on this. And one last thing, Keeping It Real only brings on community organizers. And if you've been listening, you already know. This is it. This is the time. It's Do Something O'Clock, and you, your family, everyone you love deserves to be connected to a resource that's warm and supportive of diversity, equity, and inclusion, a safe space for immigrants of all kinds and the planet. And with a microphone, you yourself can pick up and be heard. You can make a contribution at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Or you can go to our website at kboo.fm or the app. You can tap the red button at the top. Send us a contribution in a physical envelope, KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Special thanks to the entire KBOO Community Radio staff for making this all possible. KBOO Community Radio needs more volunteers, including on-air and broadcast board operations. Get involved by emailing volunteer at kboo.org. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, Community Radio.
Join me, Melissa Lesniak, creator and host of That Vegan Show, this Friday, March 28th at 11 a.m., as I interview Hope Bohanek, the founder and executive